The Ryan Tubridy Show on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Sky Broadband. With our broadband, your world is limitless. Live beyond. The Ryan Tubridy Show on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Sky Broadband. Create, do, explore. With our broadband, your world is limitless.
9:27 this Tuesday morning. Very good to have you with us. The text number is 51551. We're joined now by musician Una Keane. Good morning, Una. Thanks for coming in to see us today.
Good morning. Good morning, Ryan. Thank you for having me.
Well, thanks for coming in to see us, because you have quite a story that brings us around from Raheny to Kildare and beyond. Because you were born in Raheny, is that right?
I was, yeah. I grew up in Foxfield Heights in Raheny until I was 10.
Yes.
Yeah, I loved it. It was a great childhood.
And then onwards to?
We moved to Kilcock, County Kildare. Yeah, with I was the eldest of five, so moved out into the wilds.
Did you prefer that? I mean, you were young, but did you? Was that a tricky transition from the city mouse to town mouse to country mouse?
I was young enough, but I think it probably suited my personality. I was I love nature and I love being around animals, and so yeah, it was a bit of an adventure. It took a little while to any change, I think, at that age. But we were very lucky. Our parents just were giving us a chance to grow up in the countryside, which was great. Yeah.
Good. And music-wise, obviously, this was permeating down from, I think, your grandfather was a critical point as well.
Yeah. Our granddad and my mum's dad, Liam de Bruner, was a very inspiring character and was very been supportive of all of us from a young age, no more than any grandparent would be, really. But he was quite perfectionistic, and I think he saw talent in us and gave us opportunities to listen to different types of music. And I, being the eldest, I used to spend a lot of time. He used to collect me from Scolniason, which was in Artane, is in Artane, and that's where they live. And I had great memories of listening to Beethoven and Yehudi Menuhin and all sorts of different records he'd put on for me. And yeah, he'd bring me into the music library before it was part of the ILAC, before the St. Stephen's Green Shopping Centre was built. And I really looked up to him.
Good. Yeah. And it's lovely to have that variety of music in you. You weren't just listening to the stuff that kids listen to. You had all this other spectrum of music.
I was a bit of a dreamer anyway, so I think it just, I think I'm very like my granddad.
Good. So. There's nothing wrong with that. The world needs dreamers, that's for sure. Yeah. Which is interesting, because you went to school and for a dreamer to get into computer science, that doesn't marry.
It doesn't.
In some ways. But that could be my ignorance speaking.
No, it doesn't. Actually, it's taken a long time for me to really realise that, except I was really good at maths.
Well, that makes sense then.
And I was quiet. So that combination, the combination of being a bit reserved and maybe lacking in immediate confidence, which I have found now in later life. But my dad was a teacher. He was a career guidance teacher, and he saw that I had potential. It was at the very time when IT was really taking off.
Sure.
All the American companies coming in, and I didn't kind of have maybe the drive, not the drive, but the confidence to go straight into music or into the arts. So a very circuitous route. But sometimes I think it's no harm. You learn from every stage. Yeah. You can learn from every stage.
And then you realise, that's what I want. You know.
Well, I knew all along.
It was music.
Yeah, sure. Even in DCU, in the undergrad, I spent most of the time playing the piano in the chaplaincy centre and just going off and hanging out with a communications degree. And I think I should have known, really. But it was just, I mean,
you got there.
Try different things. I got there, yeah.
Your story takes a dark twist in the road. And it's one that you didn't want to talk about for a long time. It took you a while to talk to family about it. And now, at whatever age you are...
46.
Thank you. You've decided that you're happy to talk about it at a very public point. And this was you as a 21-year-old... going to France, as so many students are doing and do as part of an Erasmus programme, but crossing the border to a bar where you were working.
Yes.
It was a particular night. as you were coming home on your bicycle.
Yeah.
That would change things dramatically for you. Could you tell us a bit about that if it's not too uncomfortable for you?
No, of course I can. Yeah, I was cycling home from an Irish pub that I was working in a town called Kehl, just over the border of Strasbourg, so into Germany. And it was quite an industrial part of, kind of between the two towns, two cities. I was cycling and it's about 3 a.m., I suppose. It was very late. A car was following me for a while. I didn't notice it for a bit, but a car was following me. At a small distance, and I was quite feisty, so I stopped and turned and looked, just tried to see who was in the car. And a guy got out and quite quickly came up to me with a knife in his hand and pulled me off the bicycle. So I think my initial reaction was one of just defiance, but I don't know if that really stood me in good stead. But there was nobody around, and I didn't know this person. My guess is that maybe he was a customer at the bar. And I was quite naive, I think. I should have struggled more, maybe. I don't know. But he pulled me down. There's an underpass that was getting close to where the Rhine River is. And I've never been able to go back to Strasbourg, something I will do hopefully in the future. But he kind of dragged me down the side of this slope underpass, and he was brandishing this knife, and he raped me from behind. That was my first time. It was my first time experiencing sexual penetration. Even though I'd had boyfriends, I'd kind of been quite taking my time, and it was heartbreaking. And I didn't know if I'd make it. Like I thought maybe that was it. That it was that he was going to kill me. And I think only I came to. I'm guessing it maybe was around 6:30. This was in November, so it was very dark still. He just left me for dead, and it was something so traumatic that I buried it. Like I'm a strong person, but it just, I wish I hadn't buried it to the point that I had.
He left you in that place. And yeah. How did you get out of that place?
Well, I passed out. I passed out after the rape. He never used the knife on me, but the threat of it was terrifying.
Oh,
and I think what I'm trying to, the reason I would even open up about this, I mean, how I got out, I think, was I came to a few hours later. I'm guessing it was probably around 6 a.m. And I pulled myself up. It's one of the...
You cycled then?
I walked for a bit. I wasn't able to cycle, but I walked. I wasn't too far away. It's a bit of a blur.
That's okay. No, that's okay.
But I think that. I managed. I remember I put this on my Instagram because before I released my latest album,
yes,
I felt the need, certainly not for a poor me moment, but I felt the need to share this because it's something shame.
Yes.
You can hold shame for a long, long time. This is 25 years ago. Now I'm a grown woman. I have a little girl, and it's taken me a lot to come past this, but it was still something in like my close family and friends. It took me 7 years to tell them.
So let's go back for a moment then to the scene of the crime, and you got back to your apartment.
I had the wherewithal, the mental wherewithal, to go to a medical centre.
Good on you.
It was just opening, and I had been there before when I was going with my European health forms, as student forms, so I knew where it was. Mm-hmm. And they were insisting I report it, told them what happened, but I just wasn't able to. I said I would the next day or whatever, but yeah.
But you got the morning after pill, I take it.
I got the morning after pill, yeah.
And they were suggesting you report it. Did you call home and say you had been, nothing like that?
I didn't.
Yeah.
As soon as I got back to the apartment, I just crumpled into a ball.
I think it's really important for listeners and for you to know that when I ask you questions like this, I'm not asking you in any way in a judgmental or accusatory way. I hope you don't see them as that. It's not purely probative and curious to help moderate the story, if you like.
Yeah.
But I think that it just now more than ever, I've become acutely sensitive towards people listening who may have gone through what you've gone through.
Yeah.
And that, you know, it's important for you to be allowed to unfurl this awful story in a way that is comfortable to you, given what an uncomfortable thing happened to you. So when I say to you, for example, or I put it to you that, you know, you didn't report it, I think so many crimes like this, whether it's domestic violence or in your case, this horrific rape, don't get reported.
Mm.
Why do you think that is?
I think it's because, for me anyway, it was the only way I could have control over it.
Really? And that control allowed you to do what? What did you want to do with that control?
I didn't want to be defined by it. Okay. It doesn't make sense logically, actually.
Oh, I don't think it has to make sense.
Psychologically, it doesn't make sense.
But this is your brain working for you.
Yeah, I think it was, that was it. I think, I mean, I've thought about it a lot. So control, and initially maybe just a sense of disbelief that it had happened.
Yeah.
I grew up in a very secure environment, loving family. And as the eldest daughter, I was very innocent, actually. So it was just, it would have broken my parents' heart, especially my dad's heart, like to have heard such a thing. So I think I was trying to protect others, you know. And I think actually what sparked me, Ryan, to talk about this or to actually put up a post on Instagram, which was picked up by Lauren Murphy for a Sunday Times article on my album and my story.
Yes.
And then your researcher, Susan, got in touch with me.
Mm-hmm.
The kernel was an article in the Irish Times in November, or actually, sorry, back in September, October, by Schnell Miller, the author of the book Know My Name.
We spoke to her on the programme,
Did you?
Yeah, amazing woman.
And really, the way she... So I really have to thank Chanel, because for me, it was that empowering way of sharing that was the crux of it for me. It was that idea of... I think one of the quotes she had was, shame grows in hidden spaces, or something like that. I'm paraphrasing.
Oh, yeah.
And just that idea of still... 25 years on, I was, even though I had shared it with very close, I just felt it was still inside of me, this feeling that somehow it was my fault. I mean, I realised it wasn't.
What age were you when you told your parents?
I was 28.
Okay. And how did you get to that point from 21 to 28? 7 years of it, this secret.
Yeah.
What was the moment where you said, it's time? What changed?
It was a moment of a lot of change, in that I had been working. I finished the degree off.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't enjoy IT, really, even though I worked with wonderful people and great opportunities. I decided to go back and do a postgrad in music technology and sound engineering. And I had just broken up with a boyfriend, even though there was nothing happening in the bedroom department, because I hadn't dealt with so much.
Mm.
And it was just, it got to a point where I was definitely suffering from depression, and I knew that I had to let it out. I just knew for my own mental health that I had to talk about it.
How did that go, that conversation? You talked about one not wanting to break your father's heart, not to mention your mother's, but how did it go
exactly
for you?
It was really hard.
Yeah.
It came out in a tumble. Like, there's nothing tidy about a story like this. I probably got angry as well, and with my sisters and brothers. I was acting out a lot too.
I think you were entitled to that.
I think I was too.
Yeah. I think that was a lot of pent up darkness.
Yeah. Exactly.
Did you get more love and accommodation and admiration than you expected?
I did. Yeah, I was very... It was hard to see it hurting those I loved and love. I think I had to also be patient that it could. I was going for counselling at the time too. They were the Rape Crisis Centre was explaining to me that it can take time for a family to believe, or even to come around to an idea of accepting that something could happen, because it's such a horrific thing to think, number one, that it happened, and that that they didn't know about it to help you, because I didn't let people help me.
So there's a certain denial within a family, maybe.
There can be, yeah. But no, it's not been easy. It's not been easy. My brothers, I think, found it very difficult as well, just thinking about it.
I think it's extraordinary that you're not sugarcoating this story.
Hmm.
I was talking about rewriting family histories earlier on, and the mind playing tricks, that, you know, you were entitled to say, oh yeah, they all put their arms out and said, you know, everything's fine. But I suspect sometimes within a family they feel almost regret that they couldn't have been there for it, that they didn't do something, that they wish they had known.
Well, my family are they're very special to me.
Sure.
And I have huge admiration for them. But at the same time, it was something that I needed to navigate. It has taken me a while. It took me a while after that, to be honest. Like this, it's not necessarily, I think that's one of the things with an attack. Like it's something I'm learning. And also something that Chanel Miller had said, that there will be days when you revisit some of the darkness.
Mm.
And I think it's accepting that and just allowing it to pass over you. I feel like with my music as well, that's definitely been a way for me to connecting with myself on a very deep level. And I find what's been beautiful for me is the idea that the feedback, so two records, one in 2017 and one just before Christmas, that for me, what's lovely is people saying to me that they've found healing, you know, getting emails or calls from people saying, or come to my shows, that they have found real healing in music. And there's definitely an intensity to it. So I suppose what we experience and who we are, that's beautiful. If I can, because it's what I enjoy most doing is composing music and playing music. And that's a way that I can connect with people on a very deep level.
And do you think that people will resonate, your music will resonate, Una, with people more because of the story and the truth and the knowledge of your background?
Well, I hope so. It is a part of who I am, and I think that's what's taken me a while to accept. But also there's a lot of, I would hope so, but I think it should, maybe even without knowing the story. And also, I am much more than that story.
Oh, well, indeed. And in fact, your story continues to as I say, evolve, in the sense that you did find love. And I'm only just telling you things that you've said before, so it's not exactly news just in. But you tried IVF a few times. That didn't work out necessarily.
Mm-hmm.
And then that relationship didn't pan out and you decided to go it alone, if that's the right expression.
Yeah.
And you said, right, I'm going to have a baby by hook or by crook, I suppose, in that sense. Could you tell me a bit about that decision and why you felt...
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Well, I consider myself very fortunate, even though I did deal with infertility because I was older, trying to have my family. And I think the fact that the technology is there now to enable... with help with donors.
Mm-hmm.
So I thought about it very deeply. Could I handle this? This is something I could could I give the best life to a child? You know, the child be healthy? But I had tried four rounds of IVF, and on the fifth, with a lot of help and through a clinic in the Czech Republic, I got pregnant, and I loved being pregnant. And it's just something I had hoped for. There's no one has an entitlement to be a parent, but it's something that I'd hoped for so, so long. And I think given the story, I kind of suppressed that for a long time. I wasn't able to...
embrace it?
I wasn't able for the intimacy that was needed to develop a lot of relationships when I was younger.
Yeah. The intimacy sounds like you've mentioned it a few times now.
Yeah.
And so I'm going to ask you about that briefly, but not in a prurient way, in the sense that what do you feel was the crux of all of that? Was it simply the horror story back by the Rhine? Did it keep coming back to haunt you in that regard?
Yeah, I think so. I think I wouldn't let... I found it very hard to let people close.
Yeah, I understand.
And...
I think that makes sense, Una. I mean, you're having a wistful moment, I think, in some ways. And that's only right because you're talking it through. But I think there isn't a human being listening who wouldn't understand after what happened. And as you have described it, and the gruesome nature of it, and the cruel nature of it, that intimacy would be just borderline impossible to try and get back.
Yeah, I mean, it is sad. It's very sad that that happened. But at the same time, I'm really grateful that I have the strength to have overcome that. And I was very lucky as well that I was able to finally become a mum 2 years ago. And I didn't expect to be.
It would be strangely probably inhuman if you didn't feel a little, I suppose.
I think one of the things, Ryan, that I've learned about myself is that I think when you are really, when you can be quite strong, mentally or physically, emotionally strong, there is a danger sometimes to actually suppress certain aspects. And that's something that's partly why as well I chose to open up about, because I'm really actually quite private.
Yes.
I've said that a few times now over the last few
months.
No,
but you've decided this. I think it's funny as well, it's peculiar that, and this happens to me and to human beings, is that sometimes you bury something quite deep. And it could be something that's utterly unimportant to anyone else, but to you it's important.
Yeah.
And until those words, like, what's wrong with you? You know the way you say, how are you? And you say, nah, I'm fine.
Yeah.
But actually if you stopped and then said, well, this is how I really feel, and the words come out, articulation, for
it's
some weird
very
reason,
powerful.
Changes everything.
Yeah, it
otherwise,
does.
Like, otherwise it's just a myth or a memory.
You're so right. I have found that.
The words tumbling out unlock bits of you that you didn't, almost physiologically, you know, a tear might well or what have you.
Yeah. There's a lot of healing in it. Mm. And I think I had a deep sense that that would be the case, and it has been the case for me. And it has helped me connect with people and with, not just, and this might sound funny, but with every kind of being, it just helps me connect with myself much more. And through that, there's been a lot of wonderful things that have happened.
And like Willow.
Like Willow, yeah.
Willow,
little treasure.
Was born 2 years ago.
She was, yeah.
Now, you found yourself, and I'm not going to dwell on it too long because I do want to talk about one or two other things, but you found yourself essentially not homeless is too strong a word, is it? Or
well,
without a home? I mean, it's the same thing.
Technically, yes.
Technically,
yes.
Because everyone was, you couldn't go back to your folks because they were doing what so many parents are doing now, which has more than adult children staying with
exactly,
them.
Younger adult children.
That's right.
It was at a cross, at a concurrence of me having just come out of maternity leave. The landlord, a very decent landlord actually, had decided he wanted to move back into his house. At the time I thought they were just going to up the rent, but actually for them to move back in. I'd been there 17 years, which is kind of unbelievable.
Most unfortunate timing then.
The timing was desperate because I had just been paying, I had a small business, a music school, and I had just been paying salaries out to a lovely teacher who'd been covering me. Basically, everything was going out and nothing was coming in and I couldn't afford anywhere. So I didn't know what to do, but being quirky and slightly off the rails, I don't know, maybe very optimistic, I decided the best thing to do was to buy a camper van and to embrace the idea of moving to France to stay in a house a friend had offered me a loan of until I could kind of travel and hopefully with music. I had this idea that this would be a great idea with a small baby, and obviously I'm being sarcastic. I thought I could do it,
yes.
Genuinely. I had been researching it for a while and so I bought a camper van, much to the astonishment of those close to me, and all were saying, like, make sure you have a plan B. And I was like, no, it's going to be hard, but we're going to do this. And January last year, Willow was just starting to teeth. I realised that this just wasn't going to work. So long story short, I'd never asked for help before from social welfare, but I found it very humbling, but I asked for help with HAP to find a home, and I was put on the homeless list through Parkgate Street. It took a few moments of like serious breaking down and tears because I was quite, I'm quite proud, and I'd always kind of paid my own way and I had my own business, a small business. And but it took me to ask for that help, for me to realise that I needed to think of Willow. I needed to put her first. She needed a crèche for me to do my work.
Yeah. You had to park your pride, didn't you?
I had to park my pride and I had to put on the sensible. I had worn a sensible hat for many, many years. This was a, maybe call it a midlife crisis, I don't know. But
so where are you now? Are you settled?
Settled and based at a lovely, very, very lucky, found a place in the CIE works in Inchicore.
Great. So you're back to where you have been living.
Yeah.
This piece of music, Sylvaticus.
Yes.
I love the name.
It means of the woods.
Even better. You would talk. We started talking the show, began our program today talking about birds and the beauty of nature. You've talked about connecting with all beings and, you know, Sylvaticus, and maybe Willow has Sylvanian families at home. And, you know, if she doesn't today, she will tomorrow.
You see a theme there,
I feel a theme coming up. How would you describe your type of music? I'm going to play a little bit, of Sylvaticus now, if that's okay.
It's instrumental.
Yeah.
It's piano, minimalist, ambient. I use some electronics. And I can be seen going around trying to capture sounds of birds and trains, and so it's kind of it would be neoclassical probably.
Shall we have a little flavour of it?
Love to.
Sylvaticus.
Thank you.
That is really beautiful. I can hear that as a soundtrack of a really amazing Oscar-winning film.
Well, I've studied film scoring.
Well, I'd
love to.
Is that Birdsong? Did you record that yourself?
I did.
It's beautiful.
Everything I've recorded. But yeah.
It's amazing the belt you'll get out of a robin, isn't it?
Well, I think actually that is a blackbird, but you do get.
I wasn't referring to that. I don't know. I wouldn't know one from another.
You're absolutely right, because they're tiny. And
blackbirds are beautiful sound too.
Yeah.
But the robin, the tiny little throat, but bang.
It's unbelievable.
Amazing. The texts are saying, Una Keane, by the way, if you're just joining us, is joining us live in studio this morning, Mairead in Cork, it's a tragic but a beautiful story. Isn't that an interesting way of putting it?
I'm really glad to hear that.
An amazing woman, and her story would touch anyone. Totally brave and magnificent. Great soul. Go forth with health and contentment. And that's actually how I'm going to say goodbye to you for now.
Lovely.
I've enjoyed your company today.
You too.
You talk about Chanel Miller sparking your desire to come out of the shadows.
Yeah.
And I think you're probably going to do the same thing for someone listening this morning.
Oh, that would be wonderful.
Una, good luck to you and to Willow and all your family. And
thank
appreciate
you so much.
Your honesty and warmth this morning. Really, really lovely to meet you.
You too, Ryan.
Thanks for
Thank
time.
You.
Una Keane, and if you want to hear more of that beautiful music, by the way, you can head to unakeane.com for starters and explore that beautiful world. We have a couple of breaks to take, so we'll be back shortly.
Radio 1.
51551 is the text number. Of course, it's essential that I mention the Rape Crisis Centre, which has a 24-hour helpline, 1800-77-8888. There's also rte.ie/helplines, which is a very useful resource, really, that you can head to and get a steer as to advice, help, listening ears. So do be sure to pick up the phone. It could be the difference of changing your whole life, as you heard.